This is Dave Roper, take one.
So, I've got a lot of stuff to get through.
Oh, let's just crack on, Ben.
You are?
Let's crack on and get through it. We don't want to be here all night, do we? I feel like I've outstayed my welcome next. Come on, get the show on the road.
First things first, you weren't 100% certain about being here and doing an interview?
Certainly not.
Tell me what your misgivings are.
Well, my history, any sort of contact with media, especially the BBC, is they tend to twist what we say, edit out the bits, important bits, and really it's all about what they want and not what I want to put across, do you know what I mean? And that's why I had reservations, and I've still got them, to be honest.
But you're here?
I'm here. Well, I think I've got a story to tell. I think it's important that some people hear it. Whether it makes any difference to anybody's life, I'm sure it won't make a big difference, but at least I've got it off my chest, don't I?
It was the most divisive conflict in a generation. Archive footage of a riot raging across a field.
I want people to know that even after all this time, 40 years, that the feelings are still as strong within me. And I'll answer you as honestly as I can.
40 years ago, nearly 170,000 coal miners went on strike.
It wasn't just about a job. It was everything.
Was our livelihood and who we are was being destroyed.
For a year, miners and their families were pitted against the government.
We're taking on state. We weren't just taking on coal, but we're taking on the state.
And against each other.
To see your own brother turn the back on you, it's painful.
For thousands of cops, it was going to become a battle of wills.
This government will not weaken.
We became the enemy within.
This is the story of 15 men and women on the front line of that conflict.
This is one of these certain moments in life that create who you are.
It became a fight for your survival.
And to me, it turned into a war. And you're like, you want a war, you can fucking have one.
Miners' Strike, a frontline story. Archive footage of two young men playing pool inside a youth club.
I was at the youth club and the careers officer appeared. He said to me, right, what do you want to do? I says, well, I'd like to go to art school. He says, well, you haven't got no qualifications. Take the three leaflets away and consider these. And I looked at them, and it was steelworks, railworks, pits.
If you know what a coal mine looks like, get a job in Britain's modern mining industry and get more out of life.
Pit work is a really, really hard, dangerous job. But the laughter, the humour, the comradeship. All of that mixed in together, it was brilliant.
David Nixon, South Yorkshire.
March 1984, yeah, 29 years old, in my prime. Married one kid, one on the way. Not a lot of money, just took a £1,200 bank loan out. I worked at Silver Colour, which were 800 yards from my door. I loved it. But it was dangerous. There was many accidents when I think about it.
Dave Roper, South Yorkshire.
With this big fat bloke, a lovely fella. And then he walking in front of wagons and somebody took brake off him and they just killed him, like, didn't stand a chance.
People look after each other. For example, the showers. You don't say, do you want your back washing? You just go up and you start washing the back. Then the next person sees that's happening and he would wash. And then the next person. So you're about four people washing the backs. It's like this deep, unconscious act of friendship.
For a lot of years, I drove a local. Lived in a pit house. a mining estate, Cumulich, it was nicknamed Concrete Canyon. And it was like all for one and one for all.
My granddad was a miner, my great-granddad was a miner, my dad was a miner. All the men in my family were miners, and I'm a miner's daughter. You know, my granddad would sit me on his knee and tell me how important we were. We were the people that kept the lights on.
Lisa McKenzie, Nottinghamshire.
For us, in our mining community, it wasn't just about a job. It wasn't just about a job. It was far more than that. The pit was life. It was everything.
From coal mining to families enjoying a day at the beach.
We might not have much money, but we were honest folk.
Miners making their way through pits and a beauty queen pageant winner receiving her tiara.
I was shaped by growing up in that mining community and having that love. Love and safety and security. 1984 to 1985 removed all of that.
This government, unlike so many of its predecessors, will face up to economic realities.
After a landslide election win, Margaret Thatcher is pursuing tough economic policies, adding to already high unemployment.
Sometimes we shall have to prescribe unpleasant and even painful remedies.
I grew up in the 30s with an unemployed father. He got on his bike and looked for work, and he kept looking till he found it.
Thatcher's plans include privatising state-owned industries and curbing the power of trade unions.
I'm not declaring war on the unions or their leaders. We're taking the same kind of decision that has to be taken in private industry.
Next in line is the coal industry, which has one of the most powerful unions in Britain.
The National Coal Board announced that they want cuts in the amount of coal produced. It could mean 20 pits will close in the next 12 months, with a loss of about 20,000 jobs.
Cortonwood Colliery is one of the first pits named for closure. Now an aerial view of a vast coal mine in South Yorkshire. Don and Jackie Keating.
I worked at Cortonwood Colliery between Rotherham and Barnsley. And I remember there was a meeting at the miners' welfare to find out what was going off. And we were told then that the coal board wanted to close the mine in within a few weeks, with no consultation or anything.
The coal board insists the pit is unproductive and uneconomic. The union says Cortonwood is still viable and full of good quality coal.
It was basically shocked because when you think from April you're going to have no money whatsoever, none. All of us would be unemployed. You know, every family we know, all the men would be dole wallers, is what they used to call them. How can that be right when you've got hard-working people?
There's only pits holding this area together. If this pit goes, it'll be like a plague all up valley.
I used to go shopping to Barnsley regularly. And this guy says, "You're looking so grim, what's the matter?" And I told him. And he says, "Well, it might not ever happen." And I remember looking at him and saying, "You know what? It is, and it's going to be dreadful."
What could we do about them shutting the pits?
All you've got left is a working person with to down tools. We didn't want to go on strike. Nobody wants to go on strike. It's always a last resort, isn't it?
Strike day one. 6th of March, 1984. Arthur Scargill, President of the National Union of Mine Workers.
This industry is about to be butchered, and it's a crime that the National Coal Board and the government are trying to close down this industry and to throw men onto the scrap heap, men who've invested their very lives in this industry.
All Yorkshire miners go on strike to try and stop the closures. The leadership of NUM, the National Union of Mine Workers, calls for every miner in Britain to join them. Now a news report on the strike.
Support for a national strike would appear to be strongest in those areas that have already called local strikes. Yorkshire, the small Kent field, and a Scottish force of 14,000 miners.
Everybody, every miner in this country who went on strike would say it weren't going to last long. And then we'd be back to work, earning money. We were confident because we'd won disputes with the coal board before.
I'm convinced the miners can win. We only need one thing, and that's the determination and unity of our members.
The objective of the strike was the power to go off. The majority of our coal went to power stations. So if we could stop the supply of coal, then there would be no electricity. Businesses would be affected. There'd be no lights. There'd be no television. No electric kettle.
The lights go out in an underground station.
When a trade union that you're part of says we're going to withdraw our labour in order to change the minds of the coal board, this is vitally important. We all stick together.
Nottinghamshire.
When the strike came, I chose to work. Arthur Scargill came to Ullerton 2 years before the strike. Me and my best mate, we went into the old miners' welfare to watch it, and he was absolutely brilliant, oratory-wise. He whipped the audience up into a fervour. The arms were going.
Their picket lines, and did not once breach them.
But the more I listened to him, the more I realised he wasn't interested in me. He was interested in bringing the government down. So, I never went on strike.
Les Saint, working miner.
North Nottingham's coalfield was rich. So, some Nottinghamshire miners had that attitude, I'm all right, Jack, you know, my pits are safe.
Andy Beard, working miner.
As a Nottinghamshire miner, there was a sort of a 50-50 split of people who agreed with going on strike, and those who were saying, no, I'm not being dictated to. And I was probably one of those. In 84, I would have been 22 years of age. We was doing all right. We'd, you know, you've got your family, you've got your house, you've got money in your pocket, you've got cars, caravans, and you felt that you was going to be safe. But my brother was the opposite.
Steve Beard, working miner.
I had no reservations about going straight out on strike. It all stemmed the strike because from Hornwood closing and they're going to talk about other pits being closed, so it was our industry that was going to die. So it was a case of, rather stand and fight now, or else we're not going to have any pits to fight for.
A photo of Lisa as a teenager in her school uniform.
My 16th birthday was the day that the strike was called. About, what, 7:30 in the morning, I could hear people in the house, and I'm like, what is this? This isn't right, this isn't normal. So, has it got out to do with my birthday? But obviously it has. So, you know, I came downstairs and, you know, my mum was organising everything. Right, we're on strike, we're out. We're out.
A home coal service truck pulls out onto a road.
We and our little unit of striking miners, we thought that we were at war, but we were living in a community of collaborators.
My advice to every Nottinghamshire miner is to come out on strike and stop standing on the sidelines.
Yorkshire came out 100% solid. And then, so we went to other pits. That's why we went picketing, to get them to come out on strike.
South Yorkshire and Nottinghamshire, adjoining counties, right? And National Union of Mining Workers, it's one union, right? One union, and Nottinghamshire were part of that, or was supposed to be part of it. So everybody there should be on strike.
Try and get to the pits and ask us members to come out and support us. Best of luck, lads, and get through and get the message home.
Striking miners climb into their cars and drive across the country.
Pickets arrive at a place of work to encourage people to support the strike or join the strike, or at least not to pass the picket line and go to work.
If you picket your own pit, you're just a picket. If you picket another pit, you're a flying picket. I had an old Triumph 2.5 TC twin cord. Registration number AMA210N. It got nicknamed Battle Bus.
Come out on strike, straight into picketing. Loved it. Every day, because every day, well, I laugh going down, I laugh when we're in, I laugh coming back.
Archive footage of striking miners driving along a motorway.
Our full-time work changed to full-time picketing. Pits are in the most obscure places. There's no sat-nav, no GPS, no phones. We were always seen to be the last ones to arrive.
You'd stand at the pit entrance, and all right, there might be a few hundred South Yorkshire miners striking, miners here picketing. And as these men went to work, an NUM man, also an official, would have an opportunity to go and talk to him in a civil manner. If they turned round and went home, we clapped and cheered them. And if they carried on and went into work and broke the picket line, we booed them. We called them scabs. A scab. Well, they got a bit of swearing at them, of course, but that was picketing. It was guaranteed fun and games.
Strike day 9, 14th of March.
We were given our instructions to go to Ollerton. Don't know where Ollerton is. It's somewhere over there on the map.
There's always been a bit of an edge between North Notts and South Yorkshire in particular. A lot of the lads down Ollerton Colliery didn't like Yorkshire people, simple as. The Yorkshire lads targeted Ollerton because they thought if we knock Ollerton over, the rest are going to domino. And I think they got it sadly wrong.
Ollerton described them as stubborn, very opinionated. You wouldn't dream of trying to force somebody to do something because they'd probably go the other way.
Tracy Wallace, police officer.
When we got to our picket line, the police positioned us on each side of the road to the entrance.
We'd got pickets coming in from Yorkshire that day. I was out on strike. I wasn't going to cross a picket line. But Ollerton and Nottingham area was hard to convince the miners to come out on strike.
I was off duty. I was in the plough. Outside the plough, you could see the complete panoramic view right up the pit lane. There was a lot of activity. There was vans from police turning up. There was cars coming, dropping miners off. It was a local lad. You could pick out the ones that weren't from Ollerton. You know, they'd turn up with a peak cap on and all the NUM badges on the cap, and some would have a football scarf around their neck. I think a lot of the local lads that were looking at these people from South Yorkshire and saying, what the hell's it got to do? Why are you here?
The police would cordon us in, they would corral us in. That was a tactic that constantly used.
The police used to be a protective wall because as the strike went on, people were getting hurt trying to go to work.
And they would push us, and then we would push them. Push up, push up, push up. Right up until scabs cross that picket line.
A yellow car driving through a gap in the crowd, then a series of black and white photographs depicting the police corralling the striking miners.
The night shift, they had gone in and some of our lads went home. We were then going to stop until day shift. Now then it would have been about 11 o'clock That's when they threw him out at the pub at that time. And next thing we hear, somebody shouted, they're wrecking our cars. So obviously, wreckers' cars, we can't get home. So we starts running.
We had a pool match in the Blue Tit, the pub I frequented, and someone come in and said, oh, there's fighting and rioting, and a gang of us just had a walk up just to be nosy. But when we got up there, God, it was horrible. It was to think two sets of miners were throwing bricks at each other, you know, with intent. Pieces of pavement and everything thrown.
As we're running, one lad had dropped. Now, I didn't see him drop. I came up to him and saw him on the ground. I remember a friend of mine, and he says, he's been hit by a brick. These people that was around, they picked him up and put him on the grass verge. This one on the road picked him up and put him on the grass verge. The ambulance came and took him away. Maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours. It had come through to us, got to us, that he died.
David solemnly reflects.
That was horrible. Yeah, it was horrible, yeah.
Now a bird's eye view of Ollerton at dusk.
We heard this noise in the distance. All the other pickets from all the other near collieries had heard about it and were marching down.
And then that was it. The shit hit the fan. Even though you're an Ollerton lad, you didn't know how you were fixed for your own safety. It was a frightening experience.
From fights breaking out amongst striking miners, working miners and police officers, to a mine vehicle racing along a shaft.
I was concerned about my brother's safety because I knew he was in the pit.
Suddenly we got a call. We'd got to get out as quickly as possible. Didn't give us much information. They just said somebody had been killed on the picket lines. We thought it was an Ollerton miner had been killed, so we was coming out raging. And then we arrived on the surface to be told it was actually one of the Yorkshire picketers who had been killed.
It was this immense emotion. Let's attack somebody. Let's get revenge.
There were still flying pickets in the village. We'd just got to find our way home. There was no police escort. There was no assistance from the management. You was left to fend for yourself. It was scary, very scary.
And there wasn't enough police to really do anything about it. And then Scargill appeared from nowhere.
Arthur stood on this box. He says, right, first of all, we're going to give a minute silence. And at that minute silence, it gave time for all those people to reflect. And then that's when they said, right, we're going home.
News reports.
The miner who died during picketing at Ollerton was David Jones, a 24-year-old miner from South Kirby in Yorkshire.
Some miners say he was hit by a brick, but a Home Office pathologist said the likely cause of death was collision with a post or vehicle.
After that, quite a few of my colleagues then said, I'm not going back through that. And that's what the pickets were there for, to try and discourage you from working. And I suppose it worked. I declared that I was going to be a striking miner from that point on.
A photo of Andy Beard at 22, when he went from being a working miner to a striking miner. Though some Nottinghamshire miners decide to join the strike, the majority continue to work. Presenter Anne Diamond.
The split among the miners is deeper than ever this morning, with 3,000 police on the roads to keep Yorkshire pickets away.
Strike Day 14, 19th of March.
Loads of pickets and they've all swung around and gone back.
During the night, convoys of coaches and vans bringing policemen from other cities and counties converged on Nottinghamshire.
Tonight, doubling the county's normal strength. The reinforcements have come from all over Britain.
Thousands of police took part in a widespread operation to help miners who wanted to work to get to their pits.
Oh, good morning. National Reporting Centre.
632 Road, opposite the pit entrance.
At Scotland Yard, the nerve centre of the huge police operation, quiet satisfaction today that everything was going according to plan. But what of suggestions that Downing Street is behind much of the police activity?
Many suggestions have been made, and they're entirely without foundation. The police service of this country is in no way politically controlled.
A group of police officers wearing long black coats march across a road in thick fog.
In those days, I hadn't really travelled any further than Watford Gap. And when we turned up, accommodation was thin on the ground and they seemed to pick up anything that they could get hold of. It was a big hall and you opened the door and it was bunk beds as far as you could see. 250 people had to sleep there. We had quite a shock. All sorts of noises, as you can imagine. But we were getting paid double time, being away from home. Some of the lads were buying fridges, microwaves. Some bought cars. Well, they used to just say, oh, this is Scargill's washing machine, or this is Scargill's car, or, you know, thanks, Mr. Scargill.
There was nobody else going to do the job that we were doing. If we could stop the pickets coming into the county, we stopped the problem. Was I comfortable with what was going on? No, I wasn't. And was I being used? Not just me, but thousands of cops like me. Yeah, we were being used.
Where do we go now?
Home.
If you were ever to say to yourself you weren't used as a political pawn, you're a fool. Because you were.
Filming from the air, we traced the pattern of roadblocks that now control every important route into the county. Quite routinely, police are stopping any vehicle that might contain picketing miners.
Listen to me, it's my intention to arrest you should you fail to turn around.
Well, you'll have to take me then.
No.
We're not pickets anymore, we're prisoners in his own country. That's what this amounts to. It's a total police rule now. If you put this on television, you'll be the first ones that have broadcast the miners' view to what's happening with these fellas.
Most of us who have watched the scenes on television have only the highest praise for the police. They indeed have kept the right of miners to go to work open, and they've done it marvellously.
We went picketing one morning and there were a jam sandwich in front, motorway patrol car. He pulled us up, like, and he says, right, where you from? Where are you going? I says, flying pickets, we're going picketing to so-and-so in Nottinghamshire. He says, well, he says, turn fucky round and piss off back to Yorkshire. And I just thought then, that's when I started to change. Because I thought, well, my forefathers or whatever, they fought in two world wars for freedom and democracy. And these bastards are telling me where I can go, and I can't, my own country. Like, I'm fuck off. If I want to go to Nottingham, I'm going. And fuck you. I took deep offence to it. And I turned around next country lane, I went down it and took it from there. And after that, it was like, we're on a mission. I was determined.
My dad became a picket manager. My dad was a miner, simple miner. He didn't know about logistics. He had never been in the army or out like that. Yet he was creating codes. So if the police ever caught you, they wouldn't know where you were going. But it looked like an Excel spreadsheet.
I used to put lads in boot at car and put a false accent on to get through roadblocks. 9 times out of 10, we got through. But the more they tried, the more determined I became. And it became an obsession because they weren't going to beat me.
I thought, this will be a long strike. And they said, oh, no, they'll break, they'll go back. And I said, no, they won't. You don't know. And I knew damn well that it would get worse as well. It was going to become a battle of wills.
Strike Day 45, 19th of April. 80% of miners across Britain are out on strike.
Strikes have been called in South Wales and Durham. And
there was a big police presence as about 200
15 men turned up at Cunhydra this morning, ready to start the day shift. They found police and 100 pickets waiting for them.
Militants from the recently closed Polmaze colliery gathered to try and dissuade the afternoon shift from going into Bilston Glen.
But in counties like Leicestershire, Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire, opinion is split.
I thought that we should have a national ballot. We've got to have a national ballot to sort this out, whether it's to go on strike or not to go on strike.
80% of your colleagues are asked, why do you need a ballot?
A sea of striking miners and their supporters fill a town square in Sheffield, South Yorkshire. Arthur Scargill and members of the NUM leadership make their way through the crowd. NUM delegates meet to decide whether to hold a ballot on a national strike or continue with regional strikes.
We walked the Ollerton banner through with all the lads on strike from Ollerton.
There was people on buildings, on rooftops, and there were thousands of them.
Just after 1:15, Arthur Scargill swept to the platform to greet his ecstatic supporters.
When they came out on the balcony, we thought that was going to be the decision. We'll all be out on strike now. Everybody's out. We can get it resolved.
This special conference further agrees to call on all areas to join with the 80% who are already on strike.
There was no mention of a national ballot.
The conference decided against arranging a ballot for national strike action.
The strategy of area strikes would continue.
Arthur, what are you doing? It's the wrong decision. You should have gone for you. You would have got the majority. And then you would have got everybody on strike.
And some say that the working miners used the ballot as a convenient excuse to carry on making money.
Possibly, yeah. But in my case, if we'd had a national ballot, I'd have definitely voted to go on strike.
You don't believe when they say...
Not for 1 minute, they would have come off strike.
They should have gone through the ballot box and not the picket line. And that's where this strike, this dispute, went all wrong.
That was the first bit of doubt put back into my mind about, should I still be on strike? And was it the right thing anymore?
Picturesque rolling hills blanketed with grass and bathed in sunlight shining down from pearly white clouds.
Lads were fighting for every mining job in Yorkshire. Good morning, I'm Brenda Boyle. I live other side of Rotherham. I'm 87. I have 5 sons and my husband. Out of 5 lads, 4 of them worked at Silverwood Pit. I don't think that anybody knew that it were going to last this long.
Strike Day 60, 4th of May. Striking miners have been without pay for 2 months.
With no strike pay coming in, the wives of striking miners had trouble making ends meet. Women's support groups have been set up in the militant coal fields where they run soup kitchens.
You had to learn to make meals out of next to none. We always tried to make them a good meal and a good plateful. More often than not, we used to make meat and potato pie because you've got crust on that and it helps fill you up. We had a cadging team. They used to go round shops and that to catch food, parts of animals. I didn't know what animal were, pigs or whatever.
Potato fields, would find out where a farmer had set a potato if they would have them. Carrots, leeks. It was either late at night or early morning. We weren't taking a full field. They're just taking a handful here, there and everywhere. Occasionally, a pheasant or a rabbit would appear. I went straight back to the soup kitchen, then next thing you know, you've got a decent stew or a decent broth.
Made a stew. Oh, you might find some teeth, we said. You might find something what's a bit odd. Don't swallow them, the animal's teeth. Or if you haven't got many teeth, you can have them and stick them in your own mouth. And don't complain. It's a dinner, isn't it?
Brenda, oh, my God, yeah.
Worked tirelessly, yeah, to keep us all going.
What was the food like?
Basic but substantial, yeah. And at soup kitchen, we used to get at least one good meal a day. But, yeah, it was quite difficult, yeah. I didn't have any money saved. I was married with one child, and my wife went to hospital having a baby. She said, I don't know what's wrong with Babby, they've took her down to special care. Well, it had a few complications. It had a little brain, physical deformities. And after a week it died, they phoned up somebody off ward and said, sorry to tell you, Adam's died. I was devastated, yeah. I got a form for a funeral grant. They sent a letter back saying, because you're on site, you're not entitled to the funeral grant. I don't even know how much a funeral would have been. So I phoned the undertaker up and I said, I've got this problem. I've got a baby what's dead, but I don't have any money. And I'm on strike and I can't get any money. So he said, that's a bit of a problem like that. He says, I'm sure we can work around it. So I said, how can we like? And he said, well, what we'll do, he says, because it's only a baby, he said, well, he said, I'll contact a relative of a dead person and I'll ask him to come put the baby in the dead relative's coffin with them, like, so I've got a free funeral. They pay for funeral for Bobby. So he phoned me back and he said, bingo, we've cracked it. Somebody's agreed to let the baby go in coffin with him. So I said, oh, thank you. Tell him thank you, like. And then they said to me, funeral is at Rotherham Crematorium, if you want to go, like, but I said to my missus, do you want to go? She said, I don't know, do you? I said, well, no, I don't, actually, because, for one, I'm going up to somebody's funeral and they think, why the bloody hell is here? And the close people think, that's them who can't afford a funeral, like. So, a bit of pride stopped me going.
Because you were on strike, you weren't entitled to any help to bury your baby?
Yeah. And the sad thing is now, if it were this day and age, they'd have a GoFundMe page and all that, wouldn't they? If it was. The bastard Tories, that's what gets me. They could have given me a loan.
Dave struggles to fight back tears. Strike Day 83, 27th of May.
As time went by, I was selling things to make ends meet. I mean, for example, I had a caravan. That had to go. So the money from that, it was obviously to sustain the household and to keep us in. We were living out of soup kitchens. And there was little murmurs of, oh, I'm getting fed up with this, I need to go back to work, you know. It always keep coming back to this national ballot, didn't happen. Something had to change. I couldn't stay the way it was. I made the decision that, and I was going back to work. I just kept my head low, didn't speak to many people, didn't go over to the soup kitchens. Yeah, and just, you distanced yourself from the people who were on strike. I can't even remember if I did discuss it with Steve to say whether I was going back or not. But I do know once I was back, he turned his back on me.
Yeah, emotions running high, but it was his own decision to go back. Nobody was getting forced to go on strike, but you're always going to miss your brother. Yes, yes, yeah, yeah.
Kay Sutcliffe.
I would say to the Nottingham miners, stand up and be counted. Our fight is your fight.
The March of the Kent Women in Mansfield attracted miners' wives from all over the country.
The closure of pits affects us as much as it does the men who work in them, being miners' wives. And we're here to show our support and solidarity and to prove that women have a very valuable role to play in the struggle.
Our women are not just helping with the men in the kitchens, they're on our picket lines fighting.
Arthur Scargill signs a woman's T-shirt.
It's a great, it's one of the perks of the job, you know.
My mum was like in her element. I don't think I've ever seen her so happy. She's immediately setting up Ashfield Women Against Pit Closures. She's writing handwritten letters asking for support, which was really difficult for my mum because she'd not had a good education. So she used to ask me to go through them and sort of check the spelling. There was acts of kindness, acts of solidarity, acts of hope and belief coming from everywhere. Every trade union wanted to come and visit us. Every feminist group wanted to visit us. So the Cambridge Feminist Players, I think they were called, the students, came and they wanted to do us a play. I would sick to death of these people. But my mum wanted to be welcoming, and solidarity is solidarity. And also, you know, they've come from Oxford and come from Cambridge. They must have something, or they're going to be an MP one day. And then they said, but only women can watch the play. Men can't watch the play. I mean, none of the women liked that. None of the men liked it either. But again, my mum was like, oh, well, you know, let's just humour them. And it was as bad as you could imagine, sort of all avant-garde and flounce. And then at the end, they sort of turned around and they'd got blackface on, put coal dust or dirt or whatever it was on their face, and they all held hands and they went, one day the sisters and women will unite and work side by side down the pits with their men. And all the women just sat there like... No, what that shows you, what it tells us, is they just didn't understand us.
Red brick terraced houses and a nearby community centre.
The end of the day at Thurn's Co-Working Men's Club. For many of the people of these pit villages now see the police as their main enemy in their battle against the coal board. The message from Yorkshire is that long after the strike is over, the police will still be counting the cost.
I think we have to remember that these people that are wearing a uniform are human beings, constantly being spit at, thrown at, verbally abused. I've been there when cops have been given kickings by pickets. But I'm not going to stand here with my angel's wings on and say that the cops, some of the cops weren't wrong in the reaction to what they did. They didn't be a little bit overzealous, perhaps.
Striking miner Bruce Wilson is going through some of his old files.
This is my opinion, personal opinion, of the police that we come across on picket lines. Merseyside, all right. South Wales, all right. Nottinghamshire, bastards. Midlands, bastards. Surrey, off and off. Berkshire, bastards. Thames Valley, bastards. Devon, bastards. London, Met. Double bastards.
When I talked to some of the pickets a short time ago, there was accusations that policemen stamping on pickets' faces.
Well, obviously I wasn't everywhere and couldn't see everything that happened.
They were getting very brutal and nasty. They'd arrest you for anything. I mean, I got truncheon. They aim for the top of your heads. And you'll see your mate getting truncheoned to the floor. And not just truncheoned and arrested, it was like... It was... They were happy doing it. They weren't content to truncheon you. They'd like... They'd fucking hospitalise you.
I was a Grenadier Guard, 2 tours in Northern Ireland.
it was driven into me. You got to respect the police. The reason I didn't go picketing to start with, I was also a part-time fireman, that I had to book off duty at the fire station. Then the lads started to come back and they were saying, the bloody police did this, the bloody police are that. I just didn't believe them when they come back. So I thought, the only way to find out is go myself.
I didn't understand there were a big day of such coming. I went to a bag in Silver Miners Welfare Sunday evening about 7 o'clock for his orders. He said, right, tomorrow, he says, your target is Orgreave.
A bird's eye view of a massive coal mining plant.
Down the years, have you talked much about what happened at Orgreave?
Seldom, to be quite honest. I don't talk about it much. Only to my really close friends. No, I tried to forget about it, to be quite honest.
Striking miner Russell Broomhead. By early summer, Orgreave coking plant in South Yorkshire is the scene of clashes between miners and police. Pickets have tried without success to stop coke leaving the plant.
Miners say they'll keep up their picket here indefinitely. They want to stop those coke convoys leaving here for British Steel's Scunthorpe Works. Charles Hodson, ITN.
Strike day 105, 18th of June. The NUM calls for a mass picket of Orgreave and 8,000 miners make their way from across the UK. Buses filled with striking miners make the journey to Orgreave. The miners happily chat to one another on the buses, looking in high spirits as they approach the coking plant.
It was very strange because nobody tried to stop us from getting there where normally they'd turn you away. But they like told you where to go, where to park car, everything.
Miners wave and smile as they leave a bus now parked outside Orgreave. A wall of police officers are waiting for them. The miners are met by 6,000 police officers equipped with riot gear, dogs and horses.
Beautiful, not a cloudy sky, lovely sunny morning.
I didn't know what to expect. I didn't think it was anything special, to be honest with you, until things started to evolve when we got there.
Got lots of people there, all good humoured, all like this, shorts and a T-shirt. But I've never seen as many police in my life. We're like 10 deep.
Police officers carrying riot shields advance in a line, forcing some miners in a field to step back.
It just was a sea of bodies, full of pickets, people. And we were just waiting for the time the lorries arrived, making sure that nobody broke through the lines to disrupt the lorries getting in, and things started escalating.
Paul Brown, mounted officer.
We were still quite a long way from the main frontage where the lorries came in, went out, and where the mass pickets were. We knew we did eventually find our way around to the front, and the noise started to get louder and louder and louder, and the lorries that were coming to pick up the coke came down Orgreave Way, turned right, and then into the entrance. We did have a bit of a push on the corner, but it came to nothing.
A sea of striking miners surge forward into the wall of police officers.
Everybody surged at front and pushed. It was a bit of a game, to be quite honest, because you were never going to get through. We push them and they push us.
The wall of police officers stands firm against the surge of striking miners. Waves of reinforcements push into the backs of the officers in front of them. An officer at the front of the line swings his truncheon over his riot shield.
Just as we were pushing, I felt somebody get hold of my head and sort of dragged me out. And I had a neck lock on, but one had my arm up my back in a straight bar like that. One had my foot, and he's dragging me down like that. I said, oh, fuck. I said, let go, let go. And he's pulling it down like that, and I says, I'll fucking have you for that, because I'm silly like that.
A pair of officers wrestle a miner down onto the grass.
This one had got me around the neck. I hate to admit it, but I was frightened. I was really struggling for breath. And giving me to Joe, the one that had me around the neck, I think he realised that I was sort of gagging a bit, and he eased off, like, and I got dragged off to a bus, sat down and handcuffed to the seat.
Two officers escort a miner away from the struggle. A miner exchanges harsh words with an officer holding up a riot shield at the front of the line.
The pickets were getting really agitated, and it was decided that to relieve the pressure on the lines, to bring us forward, which we did.
Police officers mounted on horseback charged through a gap in the lines. The miners flee and stand aside as the mounted officers gallop across the field.
Before then, they hadn't charged away horses and things like that. You know, I certainly didn't expect that.
My horse was quite a flighty horse, but when we went through the lines, my horse would be in front. I was quite lucky. I ducked and dived at quite a few of the missiles.
People at back, pickets at back, they were throwing stones, and I mean, they weren't big stones, but there were stones that were hitting people on shoulders and things like that. And most of them were hitting us. They weren't hitting police. And I turned round and I'm waving my hands and telling them to give up throwing.
A line of police officers duck and try to catch stones thrown in their direction.
So did it feel like the police were reacting to the stone throwing?
No, they weren't. It was nothing to do with that. They were there to do a job. They were sent there to do a job.
The front lines shift and a commanding police officer speaks through a megaphone.
The policeman in charge, he shouted, "Any more missiles get thrown, I'm going to release the horses."
Stones of various sizes are thrown at the formation of police officers.
And then he shouts, "That's it, Lightning," and they all just part and the horses come out.
The commanding police officer uses hand signals to order a gap in the formation. A squad of officers mounted on horseback then trot through the gap and chase off the miners.
As I'm stood with me back to police lines, I see everybody start running and scattering. And as soon as I turn around, this police horse knocked me to the floor.
Mounted officers gallop after fleeing miners.
They were roading to people, trampling people, and they were swinging these big batons at anybody that could, followed closely by police, and right, you're bashing anybody that couldn't. Couldn't stand there and fight him, you'd have got killed.
I'm of the belief that we are a disciplined unit, and I can't believe any police officer would want to seriously injure or cause serious damage to another human being. But the adrenaline is pumping, and you can only stand so much before somebody sees a little bit of red mist.
I had a red dirt jumper, white shirt and blue shorts. I was trying to get up when this police officer come, got hold of me and started hitting me with his truncheon.
Archive footage shows the police officer dragging Russell down onto the grass and beating him with his truncheon.
He hit me that hard, he actually broke it in half.
The footage now shows the same officer running behind the lines with Russell gripped in a headlock. Russell looks shaken, recalling the traumatic event.
Get in here and see what they're doing.
The police, they totally lost it.
A pair of officers wrestle a miner down onto the grass and grip his neck. while another drags a miner behind the lines. A miner tries to wriggle free as two police officers drag him away by his arms. Another miner's bleeding from a head wound as a pair of officers escort him behind the lines.
Despite the violence, the convoy managed to leave with more coke for the Scunthorpe steel plant. The waves of horses continued into the miners throughout the morning, followed by the squads of riot police to make the arrests.
I remember being chased and thinking, fucking hell, and there were dozens of them.
Hundreds of miners flee down a road as mounted officers gallop after them, armed with their black truncheons.
So I'm not right, there's some terraced houses and there's a general, a little tunnel through, so you can access back here house. So I was in this general till cavalry's gone past, and this other young lad, miner, coming with me. And this cavalryman comes up and he literally leans over like that on his horse and he looks down. And his truncheons nearly touch the floor. And he leant down on his horse. He went, come on, he said, I'm not going to do nothing, you'll be all right. Just come out, let's have the on to the road and get on your way. Come on. And I says to the lad, I says, for fuck's sake, don't go out there. And I'm telling you now, I said, don't trust him. Anyway, he said it again, copper. So this lad went, all right, and he went out, right. As soon as he got onto the main road, copper went, boom, whack. Hit him right on the top of the head. Kid went, boom, like that. Blood all over the place. I couldn't have known. I'd have got the same. And I just looked, I went, you fucking bastard. Anyway, next minute, I hears sound of bolts. Followed up, short shield, riot squad. I thought, come on, Bruce, I think they better fuck off.
Crunching!
Hey! Crunching! Minding my own business, that, mate. First day on picket line is this for this lad, and that's what he gets.
More miners are forcibly taken away by police officers.
As the police were leading us through to lines, the other police were just coming up and giving you a kick. They were waiting for you coming through.
Black and white photos depicting the violent clash.
The policemen, they had no worry whatsoever of being held account for what had happened on that day.
One photo shows a mounted officer swinging his truncheon at a man holding his hand up. Another shows a pile of smouldering debris.
So what who did that then? How's this happen?
Truncheon.
Fucking Gestapo.
Officer on desk asked me how I'd got me injuries. I said, he's done it, this policeman. I says, he's hit me that hard, he's broke his truncheon. I says, and it's in his pocket. And all he did, he just picked his flap up over his pocket and covered it up. And that was end of that.
More black and white photos showing the mounted officers chasing after the striking miners.
No way is this picketing. The miracle is that no one has been killed here today, either by being trampled on in the surges or struck by some of these enormous bricks that have been thrown.
Paramedics carry an injured officer towards the back of an ambulance.
There were many injuries on both sides. As police drove the pickets back up a hill away from the coking plant. Cars from a nearby scrapyard were overturned and set alight to stop the police advance.
A photo of a makeshift barricade on a road.
When I got to top end, it was like a battlefield. There was corners, you were like, it was just like a scene from a war.
Footage of mounted officers trotting up a road, then miners standing behind wooden stakes driven into the road behind the smouldering makeshift barricade.
Got blood in my ear and all my shoulders were all bruised. When I got to the hospital, we were seen by a nurse and I had an x-ray on my head and I was deemed that I were okay. And then after that, we went to Sheffield Police Station.
I was just thinking, what on earth going off, you know? I just couldn't believe it, kind of thing.
Because I hadn't done anything wrong at all. I hadn't done a thing wrong. Nothing. Apart from being stood in the field.
Five miners are arrested at Orgreave.
Locked us up in Sheffield. I said, can I have a phone call? My wife needs to know that I can't pick the kids up. And that was, obviously, that was the priority.
I just had to tell the children that he'd been arrested. Oh, Darren says, my dad hasn't done anything wrong. And Nicky just cried.
Don and Russell are among 55 miners charged with riot, with a maximum sentence of life imprisonment.
I believe that was a battle set up. People were allowed in, they weren't stopped, they knew it was going to arrive there. It was all set up to create this chaos.
Policemen fought with truncheons under a barrage of stones and missiles. By mid-morning, the picketing had turned to rioting.
The TV, I could not believe the TV coverage. That was an eye-opener. We, the miners, were the bad people.
Mrs. Thatcher condemned what she called an attempt at mob rule.
The attacks on individual policemen were horrific. The police commanders said it was a marvel no one was killed.
All throughout strike, it were all biased against miners, weren't you? Clusters as hooligans, knowing why aren't they working. Didn't really understand why we're on strike.
The two convoys still got away unmolested behind the vigilant guard of a huge body of weary policemen.
The more it were on television, the more I thought that they're not going to let this lie, they're going to try and do something, you know. I became quite paranoid. I was convinced that police were following me. I was convinced that they'd got the phone bugged. And I even grew a beard straight away to change my appearance.
The trial of the miners collapses when police are shown to have falsified evidence. South Yorkshire Police pay £425,000 in compensation to miners for assault, unlawful arrest, and malicious prosecution. No officers have ever been disciplined or prosecuted for their actions.
Did you feel angry about what happened?
Yeah, I did feel angry. I did feel angry. I couldn't believe that it could do that to another human being.
Strike Day 137, 20th of July.
At Westminster, the government kept up its propaganda assault when Mrs. Thatcher gave her traditional end-of-term address to backbench Conservative MPs of the 1922 committee.
Mrs. Thatcher said that during the Falklands War, they'd had to fight the enemy without. Now they had to fight the enemy within, which was just as dangerous to liberty.
The mere fact that the leader of the country could call the miners the enemy within, it beggars belief. I served the country, and a lot of people have served the country. They've gone into the mines afterwards, and to call them the enemy within, it's just despicable. It's absolutely despicable.
Oh, it's not many things what can make me angry, really angry, and feel that burning anger, but that did. I just wanted to. I'm not violent, but.
She loved it, didn't she? She really enjoyed it.
She wanted to bring the miners down.
It was planting seeds in people that didn't really understand the situation.
I was bewildered by some of the projections of the media. I thought, it really needs to be shown that there's a different side to the miners. I knew Don didn't like the media. But unless you're willing to put your thoughts forward, then you haven't got an alternative to what they've been showing. And so I decided I would try.
What was the door came this morning, then?
Water rates, £59.11.
I'm in a better position than most of these wives because I am working. I'm earning £17 for washing up. We've had to just keep turning on the media and trying to find out if someone's going to tell us what's going to happen to our lives.
When the media did visit, we'd go out and buy a tiny little bottle of milk, you know, the tiniest one you could get, and a bit of sugar, because we changed to dried milk and things like that because they were not very expensive. But I never wanted to give that to the media, and I didn't. Probably my own pride. But one time, they'd done a really lovely piece, well, I thought a really good piece, but when they actually televised it, they got a shot of somebody else spitting at the camera, and that made me feel, well, I've done all this. And they still use that kind of, these are horrible people.
A view above a forest canopy and the rolling hills beyond, all under a bright cloudy blue sky.
During the summer, I once remember driving past a power station and I saw this stockpile of coal. It was an absolute mountain. By then, we started to hear about the Wrigley plan.
Before coming to power, the Conservative Party drew up a plan to privatise Britain's nationalised industries. The leaked report contained plans for defeating a miners' strike. Footage of striking miners, cargo trains transporting coal, lorries driving away from mines, and police officers responding to the pickets. The plans for defeating the miners' strike, stockpile coal, recruit non-union lorry drivers, train a large and mobile police force.
Then we start to realise how well prepared the Conservative government was.
Babington was besieged by 4,000 flying pickets. Police...
It was a war of attrition.
A new phase of the dispute may be starting.
We felt we could outlast the government, even if it took months.
Well, I totally deplore this change of attitude. No pretense at all of carrying out any picketing.
Our society are more interested in a few windows that got broke than the violence that our families are suffering. We've got children now starving.
There is no going back. There is no surrender.
Around 160,000 miners have now been on strike for more than 5 months. Dave holds a hand up to his mouth while looking lost in thought.
You have to be strong. People were getting into debt. Kids asking for things. But not everybody was strong enough.
The 24th week of the coal strike has begun, with the first signs of a break in the strike in areas previously at a complete standstill. Even the traditionally loyalist North East has seen a break in the ranks.
When it was just a few going back, you accepted that as kind of this, you know, these casualties of this situation.
Jeff, South Yorkshire.
Ode to a scab. A scab is a two-legged animal with a corkscrew soul, a waterlogged brain, and a combination backbone made of jelly and glue. Where others have hearts, he carries a tumour of rotten principles. Good God, that's me all over! I thought then, and I still think now, that strikes are a complete and utter waste of time. I didn't go to work because going to work in the industrial part of South Yorkshire during a strike would have been suicidal.
In August, we'd heard that Ian McGregor, Colbo chairman, he was going to do a concentrated back-to-work campaign in South Yorkshire. Every striking miner at every pitch would get this throat post in a brown, unmarked envelope. Nine times out of ten, you'd just rip it up and bin it. It was just to try and coerce you back to work, get you back to work and or bribe you.
There's a letter with a tear-off slip. I filled it in and I sent it back. I lived for most of the strike off my mother's widowed pension. And that took an awful lot of squaring. The pit manager then told me to sit on my hands, basically. There is plans in place. They haven't come to fruition yet, but you will be notified. In South Yorkshire, strike breakers were waiting for someone to start the ball rolling.
The one working miner, a 48-year-old electrician, slipped in with a police escort before dawn.
Strike day 169, 21st of August. The first miner breaks the strike in South Yorkshire.
The man who's returned to work at Silverwood left mid-morning to yells of abuse.
The television started giving numbers. It's this amount going back, and that amount is going building and building.
To the strikers, they're the Seven Scabs, but they call themselves the Magnificent Seven. They say they went back to work because they'd had enough of a strike they never wanted in the first place.
But then that figure started to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Picketers shout abuse at a white minivan driving away from a coal mine. The word scab has been spray-painted next to a front door.
Day by day, responsible men and women are distancing themselves from this strike. Miners are asserting their right to go to their place of work. The bravery and loyalty of the working miners and their families will never be forgotten.
Red paint scrawled across a wall and reading, Scabby Bastard.
I understand about the principle.
Yeah.
But there's no way that you could know what is going on in the life of somebody which might be forcing them to take a very difficult decision.
Hold on. I just got married. I've got a mortgage that's round my neck. I've got a newborn son. I've got no fuel coming into the house. We're struggling with food. I was at the rock bottom. I could not go any further down. I had nothing. So if I can do it, they could easily survive it.
The main target of the pickets today was Thornton Wood Colliery in South Yorkshire, the pit where the whole strike began.
As resentment boiled up among the miners, bricks and bottles began to fly.
An overturned car set alight.
And then when the guy at Thornton Wood went back to work, it showed that it could be done.
Strike day 202, 23rd of November.
The manager phoned and said, look, there's a plan in place. You are to meet at Rotherham Police Station. The people outside were dressed in all manner of outfits, basically to conceal their identities. We've got balaclavas, we've got ski masks, we've got crash helmets. I mean, I personally was wearing a big blue parka with the hood pulled down over my eyes. You can hear things hitting the side of the van, from clods of soil to stones, excrement, dog or otherwise. I put my hands up and say, yeah, I was worried.
A bus pulls into a coal mine in the dark of early morning and with a police escort.
Coming out of the mine, we were under police escort all the way back to Rotherham Police Station. At that point, we were let out the back of the van, and from there on in, how you get home is your problem. The neighbours knew that I was a strike breaker within days. From then on, I drove my car with a pickaxe handle on the passenger seat.
The start of a sunrise over the South Yorkshire countryside.
There were some people, they went back to work as if to say, up yours, I shall get paid this week. You rated them. We always thought this were a good, friendly place to live, you know. And everybody pulled together, but that pulled it apart. There was somebody up East Crescent had gone back to work. Nobody challenged him in any other way bar calling him names. Nobody smacked him or out like that. They shouted, you know, called him scab and all this jazz. And then loads and loads of bobbies come. There were cars all over, up street, down street. They were coming from all over. And seven of them got arrested and four our lads. They weren't fighting with anybody. They were just stood in somebody's garden, peacefully picketing. That's what they called it, but they were...
Well, they were shouting, scab?
Yeah.
So is that peaceful?
Yeah, to me it was. I mean, we didn't know they were going to get jail. We didn't think they'd go and get jail. You think, where did you go wrong? You think, you haven't brought them up right. But you know that you have, but in your mind you think, is this something you've done? And you know that you haven't done, you've done everything we thought were right. They were just waiting for the jobs.
By Christmas, an estimated 50,000 miners have returned to work. Around 120,000 miners remain on strike. A BBC News report.
The coal strike's been going on now for 284 days. Christmas, of course, is going to be a particularly difficult time for the strikers and their families.
Merry Christmas!
All the way from Greenland. Oh, oh,
oh, oh, oh. Merry Christmas!
Snowfall over South Yorkshire.
Try and keep the fire on from late tea time till bedtime sort of thing, and then it was under a duvet and keep warm best you could. We was burning anything from roof felting. See, you was burning all rubbish and everything, any wood you could get hold of, anything like that. Trees and that went missing. Yeah, the odd tree went missing, that wood. Pick one, miss one, pick one, miss one.
Did you ever go to Andy for any financial help?
No, I never went to my brother's door for any help at all, no, no. The principle's against what I'm doing. I'm striking and I'm borrowing money off a working miner. There's no point in me having principles.
Trees dusted with snow.
The funeral has taken place at Goldthorpe near Doncaster of two teenage boys who were killed at the weekend while they were burrowing for coal. Paul and Darren Holmes were digging in a railway embankment when part of it collapsed.
If you want to keep warm, you've got to take a few risks, haven't you?
Coal picking has claimed the lives of five men in Yorkshire since the strike began.
At Silverwood Colliery near Rotherham, hard-up miners scratted for coal in massive heaps of coal slurry.
All that green hill there was just all black muck. I mean, the whole lot.
It was during such a dig that striking miner David Roper became buried from head to toe in tons of rubble.
I know there were coal here, so I dug down to the coal. A couple of minutes later, I went like that and whooshed it, just all this heap just slipped. And thought, bloody hell, fire. Shoving up, shouting, what's up here? And thought, fucking hell, I can't breathe. I thought, I fucked it. And I just shut my eyes to die. Now, if I shouldn't for a second or a minute or 10 minutes, I'll never know, but I were dead. And then I heard somebody shout, "Is he here?" Like, I just opened my eyes. And the dug round here. I'll never be as close to dying and not be dead again. I can't, it's impossible. I don't even know why I'm here. And for that simple reason, I never ever go out lot today. I don't do it. And any look I had in my life, I used it all up that day, and I know I did.
He stares ahead with a contemplative gaze.
After Christmas, the mood had changed. I noticed that men were crying. I'd never seen a man cry. I've never seen a man cry until that part of the strike. Do you know how shocking that is? Do you know how shocking? Men don't do that. I saw my dad heartbroken. Crushed, really. my mum still fighting, still believing in it and fighting when I knew really that it was over.
Before the next part of our comedy hour, we're going over to the newsroom for a report from Jan Leamy.
Strike day 363.
I was at Thompson Tea, waiting to go for my next day's picket orders at Maggin. I think it was about 6 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock.
The miners' strike is over. The NUM is recommending all its members to go back to work on Tuesday.
I was laid on Thompson Tea, I was got up and I went, well, thanks a lot, because you didn't fucking ask me.
Voting at today's special delegate conference was declared a few minutes ago. 98 to 91 in favour of an organised return.
We go back on Tuesday. We go back together. And as far as we're concerned, this union fights to retain pits, jobs and communities.
My birthday comes round again, and now I'm 17. And I think I was exhausted by it. But like me mum and like me dad and like the rest of us, I didn't want to see me dad go back to work.
I think it was the right decision, I think, for a majority of men. After 12 months, Ben, if you're not going out after 12 months, I don't believe you're going to win out through experience. We weren't just taking on coal, but we're taking on the state. You can't beat state. They're not letting you win.
The march back to work, marching back up Pit Hill behind Banner, and I was right at back. And I went on pit marsh and I stood at back and I yelled back. I didn't want to go back. And I really didn't want no part on it, but that's a decision that was made and I went with it. But I'm very disappointed. That's the only time it's right that I was disappointed having to go back like that. I'd have stopped out.
I stayed out the whole time from day one right to the very end when we walked back up in March. I think there was only just over 100 of us that actually stayed out in Ollerton. You think, right, it's over, but we've done it. We didn't back in, we didn't buckle, we stayed. You're happy with that? Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Arthur Scargill walks at the front of a return to work march, blowing a kiss to onlookers.
It was heartbreaking. Everything that we've gone through, the pain, the financial difficulty, but you'd exhausted yourself for 12 months. For what?
I felt cheated, I felt robbed, I don't know what I felt awful. Basically, we lost. End of story. I had a friend.
Don struggles to find his words and looks on the verge of tears. Jackie reaches across to hold his arm in support.
The sound of the strike affected some people, but he was found hanging by his neck. What did that lad go through to get him to that point? It was only days after the strike that he did this. So it had its consequences, didn't it? Sad consequences.
He leans forward in his chair and stares ahead with a grave expression, which is shared by Jackie. At the next general election, Margaret Thatcher wins another landslide victory. Bruce Wilson is walking along a gravel road cutting through a field today. He looks around as pristine white wind turbines spin under an overcast sky.
The world is a very different place now from 40 years ago.
Oh, yes. Marvellous contraptions. I think you change a bit of times. When you look at these here, they're not an eyesore, they're not bothering nobody, and they're producing clean power. If you'd done things gradually, You know what I mean? Just over a period of time, it wouldn't have been so hurtful and hard. They wouldn't have destroyed communities.
Archive footage of a coal mine being demolished.
When Shirebrook Colliery closed, it spelled the end of the Derbyshire coal.
Weathercote's colliery in North Nottinghamshire once provided work for 1,400 miners.
Bits have closed and jobs have gone, up to 400 in Leicestershire.
The dust of Maltby's mining generation settles for the last time.
In the 10 years after the strike, 90% of Britain's coal mines are closed.
They may as well flood the valley, because there's nothing there. They may as well make a reservoir out of it, because there's nothing.
If I think about it, I relive it. And it, sometimes it's a bit much. Because it's what they did to striking miners and the families, what they did and what they tried to do. It, well, there was no need for it.
1986.
What's the future for you then?
Like everybody else, they do the 3.5 million on the door.
Miners went on strike to protect communities. Those areas are devastated through it. Some of them are only still trying to recover 40 years on.
I still blame the union themselves for what happened. It's not the same place, but I believe the industry would have gone anyway, purely through environmental issues. We've all moved on.
From Andy's stoic expression to a massive shipping and delivery warehouse in the distance.
I believe the complete deindustrialisation of Britain has meant that good, steady, working-class jobs have disappeared.
Years ago, all the jobs around here were underground. Now, the landscape's dominated by warehouses like this.
Of course, I'm glad my kids are not working down the pit. But people now have less rights than what we did 40 years ago. It weren't just about miners, it was about people, about working people, standing up against power.
I believe in grassroots, street protest. I protest about inequality, about poor housing, about bad health. And I've been arrested several times for being on protest.
You have to stand up for your beliefs. You can't let anybody walk all over you. It's more important now than ever. It's a much bigger fight.
Would I do it again? Yes. Would things may have been done differently? Maybe. But if somebody comes into your house to try and take something from you, do you say, was it worth me trying to defend this house? Yes, it was. So there's no regrets behind it, none whatsoever.
Details of organisations offering information and support with bereavement, hardship or feelings of despair are available at the Action Line pages of the BBC website. Over on BBC4 now, originally broadcast in 1984, The Cold War Power Armour.